listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and we've got so many different topics to be celebrating our new year of 2018 with, all kinds of things that are good and things that we're still working on correcting. Many things. I want to thank all of our listeners around the islands. It's so wonderful we are able to see who is all listening in.
That was a aloha, Felicia.
Hi.
I was a caller who wanted to wish us a happy new year.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, happy new year to you, caller.
Yes, happy new year to you. Do I know the caller? They're being silent on who they are.
Well, you know, we don't unmask our callers unnecessarily.
Yes, we don't.
Yeah. How are you?
Okay, I'm really good, and I'm glad that Gray is in here to help us begin the show. We're going to be talking about a number of things, and, you know, I have a few featured musicians, or two featured musicians that I want to bring up, but I'm going to start by really honoring the people who help us stay on the air. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Hey, Gray.
Hi, Felicia. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm so happy to have you dropping in on us from the Homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show.
I got to tell you, I have so much fun with our friends over here on Tuesday. I can't stop coming up.
I know. I come to a party just about every day. I come in a giant musical celebration.
Yes, Felicia, giant musical celebration, and caller wanted to bring our awareness to a calendar.
Okay.
Yes, today is the second day of 2018.
Yes, and, I noticed
so,
that.
Yeah, calendar is in view. Great. How are you?
Yeah. Very, very good, Marshall. How are you doing today?
Awesome.
So it's kind of great that Gray dropped in on us because one of the things that we have looking at, like when we're looking at what is our priorities for 2018, a lot of times they don't change super dramatically, and one that stays on there all the time is healthy, wholesome food.
Gardening.
And another one that stays on there is how do we make sure our whole ohana has something to eat.
So the food pantry at the North Shore food pantry, the Church of the Pacific, we have for the last 10 years, 11 years now. I've only been involved for 6.5, and it was going long before I got there, and it'll be going long after I'm gone.
Can I give a shout out to Auntie Kalehua Ham Young Pfeffer?
Oh,
do you remember her? She did
so
much good stuff.
Oh, my goodness, are you kidding?
I miss her all the time.
Oh, I miss her so much. She was such a joy to have there at the pantry, and what a vivacious energy source that made things happen. I miss her so much.
Yes, she has definitely set a legacy that continues. So you're part of that continued legacy. So
yes.
That's on Wednesday afternoons.
Every single Wednesday up there at the Church of the Pacific, not a quarter mile from the entrance of the Princeville, where, quite frankly, one of the most affluent communities on the island.
Mm-hmm.
We happen to have one of the largest pantries on the island. We were honored by the Chamber of Commerce and the Hawaii Food Bank International.
Mm.
We gave away 340,000 pounds of their food. And when I say
340,000 pounds of canned
No, I mean, yeah. We set up a buffet style line up there at the Church of Pacific. So when you come in, first thing you find is bagged rice.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you find is four or five cans of canned food, including canned meat, Spam, and such. It goes on to cheeses, goes on to fresh meat, goes on to juices, yogurts, miscellaneous, crackers, cookies, breads, desserts, goes into the potatoes, onions. And then we have a gleaning program and an organic garden. So the gleaning program, I go out on Wednesdays and I shake trees.
Right.
Yeah, I'll show you the gorilla collection method if you want. I can bring in 3 or 4 hours, I can bring in anywhere from 700 to 1,400 pounds of citrus this time of year. Please call me at 808-333-6823. If you have trees that are going off right now, you have no idea what to do with all that fruit on them, call me. 808-333-6823.
Can I come along with you?
Yes.
Because I want to, if and we'd have to ask the homeowners, but I've been into doing little videos. And so, like, I think if we were videoing it and showing people what it's like to have your tree gleaned, it might help them to feel yummy about it, because they would see they're not going to lose too much fruit. It's going to keep their yard and clean, their area clean, their little farm clean, whatever it is that they have, and that they're going to get stuff. So I think if they're able to see, to visualize it, that it's going to, that's going to be...
Let me tell you all the good stuff you get from that.
Okay.
All right. So if you're a homeowner and you've got fruit trees, now over here in the Kilauea area about 30 years ago, they split up all those properties into little farmettes, if you will. Mm-hmm. You get an ag discount for planting a bunch of fruit trees on their island. And 30 years ago, a bunch of 40-year-old people came in, bought property, planted trees. Well, now they're in their 70s. They have mature fruit trees. And they're feeding pigs and chickens and fruit flies. All right?
Right.
Laws have been set up. In 1996, the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Food Donation Act, signed into law by Bill Clinton, that says that me as a gleaner, paid or unpaid, I'm trying to work on the paid part, but paid or unpaid, I can come onto your property and you as a Good Samaritan, giving your fruit away, and me as a person working with a nonprofit agency that feeds the hungry, no criminal or civil liability between us. And you get a tax-deductible donation by the pound.
Yeah, at retail.
I'm not sure what the retail is.
I mean, it kind of is, because, yeah. I mean,
You looked into the...
Well, I receive it, because when I bring stuff
oh,
in...
Oh, so you already do it, so...
Yeah, so I know. Yeah. I mean, I do it to the Kilauea Food Bank.
Yeah.
A lot of different communities have that opportunity.
Yeah, all of them, you can get the tax deduction mm-hmm. break because of the 1996 Bill Emerson Food Donation Act. Hawaii, I love to point this out, was a year ahead of the states. In 1995, the Good Samaritan Food Donation Act was enacted in Hawaii. So both state and federal laws cover folks that want to give their food away. There's no liability, and that's one of the things that keeps me off property. There's a lot of people out there that would love to give the fruit away, but they're worried about the liability. This eliminates that liability. This mm-hmm. This allowed me to go out and pick 17,000 pounds of fruit last year.
Wow.
And how many homeowners are you working with to get that much fruit?
Every year, more of them. And depending on the time of year, you know, right now I'm working with a lot of homeowners because citrus is coming in so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm also working with the Village Harvest Program at Malama Kauai.
Oh, who's in charge of that now?
The Village Harvest Program's Kaylee Harshman.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you her contact information off the air. But, yeah, right now, if you want to contact Village Harvest at with Malama Kauai, Kaylee Harshman, I'm one of her, their goal in the next year or so is to have 5 gleaning teams around the island.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Because each area can have their own thing going.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm basically right now, I'm the North Shore gleaning team. I have a truck. I have the ability to gather people together and go collect fruit. So for me to bring in 7 to 1,200 pounds of fruit a week right now is easy. All right. But what we're looking at is, you know, Village Harvest is actually looking. One of their goals through Malama Kauai is to have 5 gleaning teams. And eventually we're going to have a free food distribution network through all the after-school programs, all the Hawaiian charter schools, all the food pantries.
Senior homes.
Anybody that needs free fruit. There's so much food on this island that's going to waste.
So will those teams be paid? Staff people?
Gosh, I would certainly hope so.
There's got to be funding for the vehicles and the gas.
And that's the thing. Right now, we're talking about dreams, and we're actually talking about we're boots on the ground. We have the grinding mechanism, which is people going out, spending their money on gas, and spending their time to gather the volunteers and do this. I've been doing this for 7 years now since I came here.
Thank you.
And honestly, it's what I came here to do. I didn't want to be a 60-hour-a-week wage slave coming here to this island. I came here to be part of this island. And Felicia, you know that I've been trying, and I've been doing pretty good at it.
Yeah, you have. And what I am the most excited about, like, especially if you are leading the training of the teams.
Yes, I am.
It's not just liability that sometimes people are concerned about. It is over harvest of their trees. So responsible harvest, getting the higher up the tree, getting the fruit that the homeowner can't just walk off and pick.
Exactly. That's one of the things that I concentrate on. There's gleaning horror stories on this island where they just came in and stripped a tree and none of the neighbors got anything. Honestly, if you come in and you do something with a responsible mind, and that's what we've been doing, we start with the top of the tree. And the homeowner never gets the stuff in the top of the tree. Well, quite frankly, I love climbing trees. And since I've come to this island, I was 49 when I came to the island. I'm 56 now, and I've climbed more trees on this island than I did as a teenager. I've had so much fun climbing trees, bringing in fruit.
I think that... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, especially if they're pruned right?
Oh,
get up there nicely pruned tree.
No. You never get nicely pruned trees. You have to crawl through all the overgrowth and all the branches. But honestly, all the fruit that you bring on off that tree, I can tell you about plant psychology, but all that fruit that you take off that tree makes that plant excited about making more fruit next year. If you harvest a tree regularly and you take that fruit regularly, that plant is literally trying to make more for next year. So if you harvest it and you keep doing it, if you leave it go, there's people all over this island right now that are looking at fruit trees that are dying
from lack of attention.
Lack of attention and lack of food. They've got grass growing underneath their fruit trees in their backyard where they ought to have a huge ring of compost feeding that tree. There's a lot of trees that are dying in their backyards right now, and then just about anybody listening to my voice right now that's looking at a fruit tree dying in their backyard, compost. Put lots of good compost under your tree, feed it, and your tree will continue producing food for years to come.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, Felicia Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and Gray Hayden from... Are you with Village Harvest, or you are with Church of the Pacific Food Bank?
I am with the North Shore Food Pantry at the Church of the Pacific, which is kind of weird that we lost our name to the North Shore, Kauai North Shore Food Pantry at the...
So I'm just thinking that some sort of care for the trees, maybe pruning, maybe feeding, whatever, things that actually might increase their productiveness seems almost like the natural extension of the gleaning program.
Yes, exactly. And as a matter of fact, I'm hoping that, quite frankly, through the Master Gardener program, which the Village Harvest and Malama Kauai is closely tied in, that quite there's business opportunity.
I think there's also, like, you know, it just takes people to organize it. There is, I used to be on the board of WorkWise, and that's something that can work with, you know, I think they could work with the ag department at the college and go farm. I mean, there might be, you know, lessons and classes that can be working on that. I think that there is potential, and, you know, there's probably USDA grants. So if there's an Akamai listener who thinks, ah, I could help to write a USDA grant for that because it's an economic development aspect. And, you know, as we train more people, and then, you know, you can come in with a team. And I would think when you're coming in and harvesting that it could be followed by, you know,
And that's exactly why I'm working with Village Harvest and Kaylee Harshman up there at the Malama Kauai. This is an extension of their nonprofit that's up there. Their goal is to bring in 50,000 pounds of food this year. We've managed to bring in 40,000 pounds last year. Me personally, through my pantry, I brought in over 17,000 pounds. All of that was counted towards their goal. I'm one of their harvesting teams.
Do you have any of the statistics on the underfed, like how many people are on ESLs? No, what's it called? The EBT cards? EBT.
Honestly, I don't have statistics for that.
Can you look that up, Marshall? Like, what is the percentage on Kauai on EBT? Because I think it's really important. It feeds into what we're talking about, every pun intended.
It does.
In the rest of the conversation, because we have huge issues. We have 25% housing insecure. I would think almost anybody who's housing insecure is probably food insecure. And then there are more people that are food insecure than housing insecure, and it tends to be our vulnerable populations, like families with young children, because it's harder to go out and work. It tends to be seniors. It tends to be the disabled.
You are so correct.
The veterans, you know, many people have disabilities that they're overcoming, and so when you have vibrant, healthy food, that, you know, helps your immune system. When you're talking about taking care of the plants.
Vibrant, healthy food raises vibrant, healthy children.
And vibrant, healthy adults and
yes.
healers and everything else. So just
yes.
like we're talking about putting compost along the drip line, Marshall, you know, Marshall and I, and even more Marshall, are very aware of the value of tree pruning and forestry work.
And feeding. Everybody prunes them, but everybody forgets to feed them.
So when you do that, it's the same thing like with humanity. If we feed them healthy food, it's like putting good food on their drip line.
And then you get healthy food back.
And you get, well, and for the
and
people.
And healthy adults
and
back.
And healthy adults back. So
one of the reasons that I actually believe that I've been able to do what I do, all right, I was raised an organic farmer. I didn't know what organic farming was when I was a child because we were farmers. We turned in the cow manure and the chicken manure in the spring, and we grew food, and if there was a bug on the tomatoes, we killed it. You know, we didn't go around spraying things. We pulled weeds. You know, that's what we did. We had 8 kids in the family.
Mm-hmm.
But that healthy, vibrant food upbringing that I had, I think, has actually given me an advantage into my old age that a lot of people these days will never have until they go back to the earth and actually start realizing the food doesn't come from the grocery store.
Right. It doesn't come from the grocery store.
And with regard to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, commonly known as food stamps, Felicia, 12% of Hawaii's residents were involved in SNAP in 2016, which is slightly less than the national average of 14%. And you know what, though? I saw this article earlier today. It's in West Hawaii Today, because I had not realized this. In the budget resolution that was passed in October, they cut the $66 billion in SNAP benefits from 2016 to $193 billion. They cut it by $193 billion over the next 10 years, basically a 25% reduction. So look for 25% less in food stamps over the next 10 years.
As the population increases.
As the population increases, and there is a challenge. And Marshall, I know that you do so much to be helping, like, with the CERT, the Community Emergency Response Training Program, And that's kind of, to me, where I'm thinking about this, too, because I've been focused on all this stuff going on in the continental United States with the fires, and now we have the freezing storms, and we've had, you know, hurricanes and floods, and the amount of displaced people is so profound that, you know, we need to be less reliant on the federal government. Like, FEMA is not really getting their stuff around as well as they could. And so with CERT here, even today, listening to the, we got the new nuclear war
sirens
that was on today.
Oh, I missed that. I heard the tsunami ones, and then I kind of tuned it out. Like,
yeah,
I usually
they
do.
They did our new war siren.
Right, because I was away last time. It was national news.
Okay, well, we did it last time, too.
That's right.
But we did it today, and so... tell us about CERT. Is there, because you've been bringing it up and I haven't had time to really put the focus on it today, I mean on the show, do we have a CERT program coming up?
We do. The next one is in January, and it's going to be in Lihue at the main fire station, I guess. And I am so fast, Felicia, while you're talking to me, I pulled it up. Starts on January 10th. And unfortunately, it's like in a two font. It goes through the February 14th. Oh, that's right. This is the class that's graduating on Valentine's Day. So that's
right. And I know that it's really just like maybe we have maybe one more show between now and then.
Right.
So
it's a 24-hour certification course. And when you graduate from this, then you are certified to join a local community emergency response team. Typically, they meet once a month to stay in touch, do ongoing training, and be prepared to come together to respond in an actual emergency. And the training is in a number of areas, including light search and rescue and first aid and triage and traffic direction, things like that, how to get real big, heavy stuff off of people when you need to, you know, all that kind of stuff. And communications, of course, so there the ham radio kind of folds into it. So this is a free public education that's offered by the fire department. They're doing it multiple times a year because they really want to get this this core of trained volunteers ready to go.
And it bounces around the island in different locations. So this next one is Lihue. We've had one in Hanapepe pretty recently, I believe Hanalei, Princeville last year, Kilauea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the contact information for that is KFD CERT, that's as in Kauai Fire Department Community Emergency Response Team, KFD CERT, at kauai.gov, or you can call 808-645-0661. And the thing is, you know what, too? You can take the training and get all kinds of skills, and you even get a groovy backpack at the end with your basic supplies, and then you don't have to be involved in the local team at all. You just have those skills and knowledge and a few tools to help yourself and your family in an emergency, which is a big help in itself. So,
telephone. Yeah, perfect. I think that one thing that happens with that is that when you have a whole bunch of citizens in the community who are competent, it just brings up the whole tone. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, Happy New Year, everyone.
Hi.
This is Kuhan calling.
Oh, hi, Kuhan.
Happy New Year.
Aloha,
hi.
Kuhan.
I've been listening to the great information about the food bank because I used to live near there at Kalihiwai Ridge and was involved with the garden. And I don't know, I just thought it was such a great way to start your first program of the year. And I wanted to offer some good news you might already know about for this 2018. And it relates to the CERT and to all of the nuclear sirens going off today. Did you hear about the olive branch that was extended by Kim Jong-un to the South Korean president, Moon Jae-in.
So that's the North Koreans?
On New Year's.
The North Koreans talking to the South Koreans?
That was the offer.
Well, yeah, the South Koreans have been wanting to do this for quite a while, most of last year, and they were completely snubbed by North Korea, but suddenly there's been a pivot. And North Korea has been asking, or yesterday made the announcement that they'd like to participate in the South Korean Olympics. And within hours of receiving the phone call, or rather within hours of the announcement, North Korea got a phone call from Moon Jae-in in South Korea saying, yes, absolutely, we will talk under any circumstances at any time with anyone from North Korea, because what we want more than anything is peace on the Korean Peninsula. We don't want the outbreak of war. And I think they're speaking for all of us in the Asia-Pacific region. We all know that
all of
how
us
awful
in the world.
That would be. Here we are, how ironic that on New Year's Day or at the New Year, Hawaii is blasting nuclear sirens, and how ironic that in the meantime there's an announcement that the North would like to make peace with the South. But what's so interesting is that they left the U.S. entirely out of the equation, which is such a canny maneuver on the part of North Korea to try to forge peace without Trump.
I call that out-creating the problem.
Right. Excellent. That's really good. So I feel really good about that, because I'm actually calling from San Francisco at the moment. I'm here for a month. And to be quite honest, I left Christmas Day and I was full of trepidation, because I honestly, as a person who watches the Korean Peninsula closely, there were many, many signs showing that there was a good chance that there would be some sort of conflagration. After
Which
the
means
holidays,
conflagration
Trump
means
was going to do something after the holidays.
A problem exploding.
There were a lot of hints toward that. And I think that even North Korean intelligence knew that, which is why they chose January 1 to make their statement. Because now everybody in the CIA and intelligence with military and the Pentagon and the State Department has to have a lot of meetings and huddle together and regroup and talk about how to deal with this new development. And so it's great, because first of all, Moon's been wanting to have North Korea participate in the Olympics, thinking that they wouldn't attack if their people were competing in the Olympics. And now they've responded finally. We'll see what happens. Maybe things will start to ratchet down, and that just makes me really happy
for the new year.
And so now, after having heard it, I can relax. I was honestly extremely nervous, and I almost canceled my trip. But now hearing that, it just completely made my day, and I feel like I hope things will start to look up in the new year, even despite the tax bill.
Well, you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, Gray Hayden in the studio, and Kuhan Pak on the phone right at the moment, talking about this element of change that has happened in North and South Korea. I see that it was in the New York Times, and so the New York Times headline was actually, we always have to look at, it says, Kim Jong-un's overture could drive a wedge between South Korea and the U.S., but it goes on to speak about what you're talking about is the two of them getting along instead of fighting, at least over the Olympics, which is what the Olympics were designed to do over 100 years ago, was to try and create an element of peace between different countries. It's hard to go against that, you know? So.
It really is. And so I'm just thrilled about it. And I've always liked Moon Jae-in, the new president of South Korea, who replaced the woman, Park Geun-hye, who was impeached. I've always liked him because when I was on the island of Jeju, in South Korea, protesting the development of a gigantic base that specialized in porting warships that held Aegis missiles that were tested on Kauai. The only presidential candidate who came to give support to the protesters was this president, Moon Jae-in. He lost the election, Park Geun-hye won, but then upon her impeachment, he was reelecting with resounding popularity. He was a civil rights lawyer. He was a student protester for human rights back during his college days. His parents were both from the North, so he's very, very connected to the idea of a unified, peaceful peninsula, as so many of us are. My father also is from the North, and in fact, most of the people who immigrated as first-generation immigrants from Korea came from the North because it's a culture, it's a more industrialized culture before the war, with a lot more ambitious go-getter types, whereas the people in the South were much more agricultural, much more tied to their land, which was why it was so tragic that they built that Navy base at Jeju Island, because that was a very indigenous, shamanistic group of people down there. And you know, it's so tragic when people that are that connected spiritually to the land have it paved over with a military base that are now housing our Aegis missile warships tested on Kauai. So we're all connected, and it's good to see, you know, hope of peace, a move of peace in this way. So I'm happy about that for the new year.
That's great. So peace would be, I know you've spent so much effort at looking at the militarization of the Pacific. If we were looking at your priorities for 2018, would that be further encouraging peace? I know that's asking for a lot, but...
Well, I should hope so. I do want to give a shout-out to John Letman, Kauai's resident Asia-Pacific journalist, for being recognized as having written one of the 10 most read stories in The Diplomat, which is an extremely prestigious website focusing on Asia-Pacific politics, geopolitics. And he wrote a story that was just excellent about the movement to stop the THAAD missiles from being deployed in South Korea, and that came out a couple of months ago. And he lives in Kauai, and he does excellent work, traveled to Korea, got a lot of first-hand accounts from farmers there, elderly people. Most of the protesters are in their 70s and 80s. You know, they've just been there their whole lives, and they don't. And they remember the Korean War. And,
That's right.
I was thinking about those crazy photos of North Korean dictator with all of his generals around clapping all the time and smiling, and how they look to be in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and I realize, or 60s and 70s, how these guys lived through the Korean War, which was absolutely ravaging, and I just realized that. So when they all, I sort of picture them all sitting around in a huddle trying to strategize is how to deal with this massive world superpower that has more military firepower than anyone in the history of the planet, with how many thousands of nuclear warheads. And you've got to be, as any woman in an abusive relationship knows, you've got to be very savvy to use that
out-creating the problem. You can fight a problem.
Right, out-creating the problem with your own jiu-jitsu. And I think this was a really perfect geopolitical example of that. And yet it's so simple, right? Like, let's extend the olive branch to South Korea.
Without
I think it never occurred
permission
to anyone, because the actual war that continues to this day with North Korea and the U.S., always left. It was not a war with South Korea. It was a war between the U.S. and North Korea. So we always kept the focus on that. But hey, why not just go directly to you know, the traditional, you know, the cousins down in the South.
Kuhan, if this is an opening for peace, what do you think of the analysis that it is because it creates a level of stability that goes along with basically how we got through the Cold War, mutually assured destruction? Up until now, the United States has not been assured of its own destruction if we attack North Korea. But now, at least they're asserting that that's no longer the case, that they can reach the continental United States with nuclear-tipped ballistic missiles, and they're going to go into mass production mode. That was the other thrust.
And so what's your question?
Do you agree with the analysis that there's an opening for peace because the state of mutually assured destruction has been reached?
Oh, you mean like the Henry Kissinger analysis?
Well, I'm sorry. My history classes didn't serve me well enough, and I'm a little too young to know.
In the geopolitical playground here, the reason Kimmel Jong is doing everything he can to get all the nuclear weapons he can so they can come to the bargaining table as a nuclear power.
Right. We've got a poor training thing going on. Were you ever in the military?
I was a 12-year missile fire control technician in the United States Navy.
That's a yes.
Yes. I worked on the Tartar and Talos missile system. The Aegis system is the newest missile system that the Navy works with. And just like anything else, it isn't a matter of gun killing people. It's who's pulling the trigger. The Talos, the old system that we had was an individual ship system. With the Aegis system, it's a ship, it's a fleet-wide system. So if you have a carrier in the center of the fleet and 150 miles out, you have the support groups and what they would consider the heavy battle, you know, the heavy ships like the cruisers. And then another 150 miles out from there, you have the frigates and the destroyers. Each one of them are tied together electronically these days. So you have a 300-mile-wide, 300 in each direction, 600-miles-wide swath of actual ships crossing the ocean. Over that, you have the AWACS system that gives you a radar picture from way further out. So as far as a battle group, we control about 1,200 miles of ocean anywhere we go. It used to be that you would be contacted and asked to fire a missile. Now the guy that's controlling everything from the carrier just presses a button and your ship fires a missile from 300 miles away.
Wow, so it's all on autopilot. We had some discussion here with some friends that work in nuclear disarmament with Russia, and that was definitely a part of the conversation on how autopilot it was. And Kuhan,
it's not so much autopilot, it's centrally directed.
Kuhan, I just want to follow up because I asked you a question that didn't really give you a chance to respond. You wanted to mention something about Kissinger.
Oh, well, you know, I was in I was in the living room when you were asking that. And in the meantime, I moved to the bedroom because the reception on the phone was so faint. It sounded like you were in Antarctica.
Oh,
and
I sound cold.
No, you weren't shivering. It's just that the reception was very, very distant. And I think you were talking about the theory that if everybody's armed, then it deters out of anyone from starting a war. Is that what you
yes.
were talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a theory that Henry Kissinger came up with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or first developed the term for. I think he used the term, actually.
Well, when we're talking about Henry Kissinger and that war deterrent type of situation and things blowing up, I also just want to bring us over to Israel for a moment, because when I think of the hot spots that are going on right now, Israel's a little bit of a hot spot, both with the movement of Jerusalem, and then I was listening to a show earlier today on KKCR Democracy Now, where there was a discussion about Facebook being told who they have to take off the off their line by the Israeli government, you know, and how much there is essentially selective compliance with those type of choices. Countries all over might tell Facebook, oh, we don't want you to allow this person to be there or that person or this entity. Have you followed any, either one of you, Gray, Marshall, Kuhan, about what's going on with the Palestinian-Israeli circumstance?
No.
Okay.
Other than they're an occupied people, and every time I read anything, it just seems like they're being terribly oppressed.
Well,
they get a lot of our tax money in Israel.
Yes, and I guess this is just news today or yesterday or whatever. Trump either has done it or proposes to cut aid to the Palestinians, saying that they're not a partner for peace. Wants to write them off.
Yeah.
We live in interesting times.
We live in interesting times.
That's a Chinese curse, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that, like, when I'm looking at kind of the button points that I was looking at for this show in talking about priorities for 2018, and I'm writing them down, like, I have overcoming challenges like the separation of the class system, you know, what's going on with the health insurance crisis. It's beyond just that people can't get health insurance. You have it. They don't want to pay for it. I was looking at poverty and, like, Jeff Sessions, you know, double downing is what it seems like to me. Already we incarcerate the poor. Throwing out a few, like, trolling here, little topic pieces, because Jeff Sessions, I don't know if you guys followed that, but he made it even, he's the Attorney General for the United States, more easy to be fining and incarcerating people who can't pay their fines. We have water issues, we have education issues, things with the court system. When I look at all these things and I think, wow, when you see how much houseless across the country, when we think about what we invest in the war machine versus what we could invest in infrastructure.
Can I add to you that a few things that I keep in my head?
Yes.
In the next few years, the climate refugees on this planet are going to be incredible. People are going to have to leave places like, Arizona and New Mexico for lack of water and for too much heat. The climate refugees are going to be leaving America trying to get to Canada in the next few years. And I'm not climate refugees leaving Chad or any place in Africa. I'm talking all over the world. We're facing stuff. We're facing stuff that the human civilization's never faced with a population that's never been on the planet before. Mm-hmm. So the challenges that we're facing, you know, some of these things, nuclear war is kind of small actually compared to six people dying from lack of hunger. You know, we're heading into really interesting times.
That if it is a strategic nuclear war, meaning, you know, you're in the military, one bomb leads to another, and suddenly you've got over the layer of where the clouds can rain on, you've got this fallout creating a shell around the planet so the sun can't get in, and then you've got nuclear winter, and then the whole planet dies. I don't know. You had Helen Caldicott on this show, Felicia. Maybe she talked about that, but
very vibrantly.
Yeah. So, it's all bad, right? No, but it's all good because we're here and we're talking about it.
Talking about it,
and we can work things out.
Talking about it's the best way to do it, but preparing for the eventualities, the things that are going to be coming in this world. You know, having the bravery to actually stand up and say that, hey, this may happen and I have to prepare for it.
Do you think that Canada will prepare by building a wall?
Depends on how rude Americans are.
Yeah. Well, Marshall had brought up mutually assured destruction. Do you think that that's a worthy strategy for the North Koreans? Are you still there, Kuhan?
Is Marshall there? Was this a question for Marshall or for me?
Well, it was Marshall had asked that question, and I kind of interrupted it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. this came up in a roundabout way, these thoughts, when I saw this photograph that maybe you guys saw of one of the new slave markets in Libya, and it was three men tied together at the ankles, hanging upside down like chickens in a market.
In the slave market? They have slave markets in?
Yes, they do.
In Libya.
Wow.
And when I saw this photograph, I couldn't sleep for two nights, not because of the obvious horror of it, because we're just confronted with these kinds of horrors every day, but actually because it sort of completely dismantled everything that I believed in about America and the Constitution and that we were an exceptional country with a special way of governance that assured that we would move forward and there was progress being made for the blacks, for the women, for all the minorities. I mean, Martin Luther King was always propped up as evidence of that. And then here I saw this slave market, and it was a Newsweek magazine, and then they had a map, and they showed all the cities where all the slave markets were all over.
Wow.
And I thought, wait a minute, Libya, that's the country that North Korea always cites as the reason why they decided it was imperative for them to pursue a nuclear program in order to avoid getting invaded by the U.S. because they say Muammar Gaddafi agreed to denuclearize and he was rewarded by being overthrown and assassinated. And the U.S. gave the power to run the country to an Islamic fundamentalist group who is now running the slave markets. But more horrifically, well, let me just back up by saying that I decided to do some research on this assassination. This was only 3 weeks ago that I first found out about the slave markets and then wanted to do some research about Gaddafi. And what I found out was that the reason the U.S. assassinated him is revealed in one of the 300 or two of the 300 emails that are so controversial around Hillary Clinton. And in one of or two of them, she's having a conversation with her assistant who says that Gaddafi has the largest oil reserve in all of Africa, and he is requiring, he's going to start requiring that anyone who wants to buy that oil do so not in dollars, but in the dinar made of gold.
Gold dinar, yes. I was following that, yes.
And so doing that, of course, would drop the U.S. dollar from being the world currency. And that's what Hillary's assistant was saying. He said, we've got to take this guy out, otherwise it's going to destroy the U.S. economy. So U.S., the State Department, made arrangements for people that work for this Islamic fundamentalist group to assassinate Gaddafi, and they did so by thrusting a knife into his rectum repeatedly while videotaping it.
Yes, I've seen the video.
Shortly after that, Hillary was interviewed in a Barbara Walters-style interview that's quite accessible, and the interviewer says, so, what do you think, Muammar Gaddafi? And she says, well, we came, we saw, he died.
Yeah.
Maybe you remember that.
I do remember it because I have seen the montage put together in a film that was made. And, very disturbing. And so you are bringing this to the point of going, Gaddafi was tricked and rewarded. Yeah.
About, well, is this mutual destruction a wise move? Well, I think that because of the history of the U.S. backing out on its agreements, and right now we're saying we're not going to respect the nuclear denuclearization agreement we made with Iran, well, other countries like North Korea, what choice do they have when they see not only that, but every year for the past several years, the U.S. war games that are being practiced outside North Korea's border is a practice run for decapitation of the leader. And they know that that takes place every year, a decapitation war exercise. So
do you mean that literally or figuratively?
Literally.
Literally.
Like going in and decapitating him. That's what the soldiers practice doing.
Gray's nodding his head, really.
As a military veteran, what's going on over there is every single time they do their war exercises with the South Koreans, it is for the ultimate destruction of North Korea. All right. We've used North Korea as a reason for building up our military for years and years here recently. It's a really good way to keep our military in proximity to China.
Right, who doesn't play the financial game any longer, right?
Exactly.
They're no longer doing as is the world reserve currency.
Exactly what they didn't do over there in Libya.
Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa are all aligned outside of using the world reserve currency.
All the war games that we have over there are strictly designed. One of the reasons that they're working on the nuclear deterrent is to keep us from destroying them. The only thing that's kept us from destroying them for this long is the fact that there's 2 million people in South America that'll die in the first 20 minutes of any outbreak.
South Korea, excuse me.
Yeah.
South Korea. There's 2 million people in Seoul that are ready to die within minutes of any outbreak of any hostilities. And all these war games that we're doing over there is to try to minimize that initial impact and destroy North Korea as quickly as we can.
And you said that what keeps us from doing that is that
loss of life in South Korea.
So with South Koreans as a proxy for Americans, there is the mutually assured destruction that
pretty
has
much
kept there from being a war.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Japan.
Yep.
And Japan.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so now North Korea, at least according to what they say, knows that that extends to, you know, for all practical purposes, the rest of the world. They can hold off the rest of the world, so now can they relax and relate?
No, they need to, now they don't relax. They build up their nuclear arsenal and negotiate. That's what they're hoping for.
Relax into negotiations, exactly. Keep on building the arsenal. Increase the effect of mutually assured destruction and relax into a stance where they can negotiate and create
and
relationships with other countries as an equal.
Get rid of the
it's
sanctions
very similar
and live their
to
lives.
The way the NRA justifies the Second Amendment.
Would that be the National Rifle Association?
Right. The right to bear arms in order to defend yourself and your sovereignty. Now, I'm not taking one side or the other in any of this. But these are the arguments put forth, and we can look at history and say that having the bomb has kept North Korea's sovereignty against the world's greatest superpower in history from carrying out its long-standing plan to do a regime change, you know, one of many, the first of which being the Kingdom of Hawaii was the very first regime change that the United States conducted. With an eye toward China. Mm-hmm. With an eye toward eventually getting to Asia.
Oh, I'm actually surprised it was the first one.
Yeah, me too. I'm thinking, well, kind of the Native Americans across the United States.
Well, yeah, you're right there.
And then really the War of 1848 when Polk sent, who was it, it'll come to me. The General Scott went in to defeat Santa Anna in Mexico City. That's how they got the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo that took most of the Western United States from the Spaniards.
Wow.
Winfield Scott, General Winfield Scott. You know,
cool girl.
Well, you know, like it's happened a lot. You know, I mean, really, if you look at probably the history of any country, so I can kind of give the United States a little bit of a pass, but certainly since the start of the United States, if you include the dispossession of the lands from the Native American nations, we have, I think, not been in a war something like 12 years. It's like a
we've got one president that didn't drop bombs on anybody, and that was Jimmy Carter.
Is that right?
That's period.
Interesting.
Yep.
I know I used to, when I did a school program, Akamai Learning, we used the Kingston history book. They had a history book, and it went across all the continents and everything else. And sometimes I would give the kids I'd say, look, find pages that doesn't have something to do with war. And so as they will go through about 4,000 years of history, the minority of the pages didn't have something to do with war. And it's like, we got to get over it. War everywhere, it's not good, when you hear these...
People talk about paradigm shifts, okay?
Yeah.
We've been in the same paradigm where if I'm stronger than you, I can beat you down and take what you have. All right, that's what war is.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it's gotten us to where we are now. We're the most technologically advanced killers on the ever. It's time to change. I'd like to see, hey, let's take that bazillion-trillion-dollar budget and put it into education, health, clean water. That would be wonderful.
I would love that. And, that just reminds me, in doing my research about the assassination of Gaddafi, what I found was photo after photo of women protesting to save him,
mm-hmm.
because he gave free maternity leave, free health care 100%, free university education 100%. He had all this wealth in Libya with a lot of gold reserves, a lot of oil, and he really put it into the country's, into the good of the people, and they loved him. And I felt so ashamed because when that assassination took place, I just assumed, because I read the news and CNN, that, well, this is a good thing, he's being belligerent, whatever. And now that I look and see that the U.S. gave power to these Islamic fundamentalists who are oppressing women and holding slave markets. Oh, and another thing is he wanted to create a Pan-African Congress or Pan-African Union based on the European Union that would unite the lighter-skinned North Africans with the Sub-Saharan Africans. And now the fundamentalists there are controlling the economy, the government, and the darker your skin is, the more prone you are, then you're a slave.
So
I
want to throw a few things in to support what you're saying before I have to break for a moment at the top of the hour. We can continue it, but I will say that at the time that was happening, I had a young Egyptian in America Facebook friend, and I would ask him questions, and he would shock me with the answers. Like, he was able to intercept the news feed from CNN on the way up to the satellite before it was edited. I was like, oh my gosh, So we were seeing how manufactured was that news. Like, I would just ask him a question, and he'd go, and give that back. And he was the one who clued me in to the gold dinar. So prior to the death of Gaddafi, I was seeing that. And prior to the death of Gaddafi, I was seeing the things, like you just gave a half list of what was working out for the Libyan people. So to see how much that was changed, and he kept... I wouldn't expect near the answers. I'm just asking this young man. And he went to go get a job at the sheriff's department. He had an interview at 11 o'clock that morning. He was all excited because he was actually trying to help the United States. And the sheriff's department has a different level of authority. And he had a single vehicle accident on his way over to that position in, a day that wasn't very busy, sunny. I was devastated because I felt like maybe he died as a result of what he died putting on Facebook. Yeah, he died. And it was in the time that he was putting this stuff out. He was a valet guy at a nice restaurant, and his dad was a professor of Middle Eastern studies and Hebrew studies at UCLA. Mm-hmm. And he went to Egypt. His dad left the country. Like, I even asked the dad, hey, and they didn't really realize. They looked at his Facebook wall and they were like, oh my gosh, because the dad didn't know those things. But I was just trembling through the whole thing. And when Gaddafi was killed, because during the what they called the Arab Spring in Egypt. Somehow, those people, they liked my Akamai Backyard film. How's that? So I had all these Arab friends on Facebook, and I started to see these different things. And what we're told on the news is not the news, you know. It is massive propaganda. I'll probably get a little bit of heat for saying this, but that's what it is. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, the station that loves you, volunteer done. It was all volunteers who are in here, listener-supported. And I want to also just point out something I'm kind of excited about. We have a new antenna up at 88.9 in Honolulu. So
Wow. We're
not only streaming worldwide at kkcr.org and at Moloa'a and Anahola at 92.9 and, you know, Island Wide at 91.9, but this new K205 FM in Honolulu, we now have over a million listeners.
That's so awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we have over a million listeners. They're going to have to start to learn that they can hear this. But we are now streaming across Oahu. And I can always look here online. I see who's listening through the Internet. Yes?
You mean a million listeners or a million potential listeners?
A million potential listeners. Okay. A million.
Just for a second there, I was getting nervous.
A million potential.
Watch your language.
Right. A million potential listeners. But it is a place where it is largely uncensored news. We can't swear. We can't do a call to action. We have some federal rules.
And a disclaimer.
And so right now I need to say that Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
World-class chamber music is coming to Kauai. Personal Financial is proud to present the 8th annual Kauai Classics, Friday, January 5th at St. Michael's Church in Lihue. There are two ticket options, and all proceeds go to the many social service programs, all here on our island, vetted and funded by Kauai United Way. Go to kauaiclassics.org for information and reservations. That's Kauai, KLASSICS.org.
Ke ala nu'ukia KKCR. KKCR's mission statement. O KKCR kahui lakio ku oko'a no Kauai. He hui leki o kaiaulu e pai pai iae e ka lehu lehu a e ho'o lele ana me ka ho'o laha ole. KKCR is Kauai's independent radio station, a community radio station supported by the people and broadcasting without commercials. Na pahuhopua KKCR, the goals of KKCR. E ho'o ulu I ka hoi, e a oaku, a e ho'o hau oli ho'i I na hoa ho'olohe. To encourage, to teach, and to also cause enjoyment in the listeners. E maalama, e ho'omau, a e ho'olau le apu I na mea a me kanohona Hawaii. To care for, to perpetuate, and to celebrate Hawaiian customs and lifestyle. Ho ike I kanani a kea o ko ka ko kaiaulu a me ke kaiaulu ku waho. Showcase the broad beauty of our community and the outside community. He kahua o KKCR no na leo a me na mele laha loa pu no me kalaha ole. O ke ke kahu foundation, ka mea e ho'oholo ai ia mau papahana lekio. KKCR is a platform for voices and songs both well-known and underrepresented. The Kekahu Foundation facilitates these radio programs.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Kuhan, are you still there?
I am.
Okay. Hey.
I asked Felicia while we were off the air if she'd been paying attention to developments in Iran. I have a little bit, but Kuhan, have you?
No, I'm not. I don't know.
How about you, Gray?
Just the censored BBC news, but basically they're, you know, I heard it said best that what's going on over there in Iran ought to be left to somebody who has actually lived in Iran, knows Iran, and understands the politics, geopolitical, and dynamics of Iran. But just like anything else in here, if you've got protests over here against the government, it's not just one thing. It's a series of things that lead up to that, you know.
I have some friends that are not that long away from Iran, and like when I have tried to talk to them about coming on the radio to talk about Iran, they tend to be a little bit reluctant because they don't want to create anything difficult for their families. And
at
then
home.
Yeah, and then I also have friends that live here that are Palestinian and have, you know, active stuff, you know, knowledge about what's going on with Palestine. And, you know, I always joke and say I'm not Jewish, but I'm Jewish. Like, I really connect with the Hebrew culture, yet I feel, and actually, Kuhan, your other half, you are half Jewish, right?
My mother's maiden name is Ashkenazi, which is one of the original tribes talked about in the book of Genesis.
So you are Jewish Korean by ethnic background, so like in still wanting to do the right thing for Palestinian people, it is for the people I know here who I've gotten really impressive information from on Kauai Community Radio. I try and have first person sources to bring it in rather than to say, oh, the person I picked up hitchhiking said, or the person I met over there said. But they also are very reluctant to go on the air to speak about what's happening in the country because it could affect their own status for traveling back and forth. We maybe aren't exactly like what America used to point out was bad with third world nations or Eastern Bloc nations, but we are shifting in that direction. You know, I think our capitalism has matured a lot. So sometimes when we look at what creates these problems, like if we shift our focus a little bit, and Kuhan, you're welcome to stay on the air with us if you would like. You know, we can take other callers too. If they want to come in, they can call in. But when,
yeah, why don't I get off and open the lines up for others?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, but thanks. It's great to talk to you as always, Felicia. Nice meeting you, Gray, and nice to talk to you, Marshall.
Great
and
pleasure.
All my love to all the people of Kauai, Oahu, and beyond.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, Kuhan.
Happy New Year.
Thank
Aloha.
You. Aloha. Well, like when I look at some of the other more like local and national issues, this past week, and then certainly I will be there on Friday. I've gone to the two court cases that are in this current piece with Wailua Nui Ahuano, which is also known as that Cocoa Palms area. The longer name, Wailua Nui Ahuano, is more the Ahupua'a, the whole valley watershed area of that's affected. But I've been watching that. And it's interesting. I was not upset at the news reports in the Garden Island. The challenge there is it is in court is two completely different mindsets and systems. And we have two courts to even deal with that there. These
three
guys
courts.
Three courts. But
you've got the criminal, the civil, and the land courts.
And in this, we have district and circuit court to be able to look at these two. And then we have also civil court, right? And so,
The end game is get this in land court where you can actually prove title. to this is starting out in the civil and the criminal. I've been lucky enough to that I've known Noah on this island.
Esperito Mao?
Yeah. He's one of the first young men that I've met here on the island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so watching him and the folks out there in Wailua with Jesse Steele and Kainimi, these are guys
in Wainiha,
these are guys that I've been lucky enough to know for years now, seeing them working into this, and they're prepared for it. They've had a good teacher.
Okay, well, I know that they are working on it, and in court there, their learning curve is pretty steep. It is, everybody's kind of confused. I appreciated that Alan Parakini's story in the Garden Island said, you know, the layperson, it's really tough when they say, okay, you're in here for trespassing and we are doing an eject motion, but they're only going to listen to one party's side of the title and that they are unwilling to look at the title, that the title has to be determined in another court. So if when they need to determine the title months down the road, but in the meantime, these guys could be ejected. It reminds me of Ho'olokahi Kanuha's argument that he used effectively in circuit court on Hilo when he had a trespassing violation for trying to block the trucks coming up to Mauna Kea. He used the argument saying this is the lesser of two evils, meaning if they did not stand in front of those bulldozers, that there would be nothing to argue because they would have already started to dig the foundation in the building and for the building of the telescope, which is four stories deep, by the way. So it would have already desecrated what's in there. And so for the Wailua Nui Aho Ano discussion, you know, I was just at Lydgate Park yesterday. You see where the cultural remains that haven't been scoured away are still evident there on the north end of the park, and it goes all the way up the valley. It is, and so what we see in this digitizing or partializing of court cases, they look at a little, you know, quarter acre of land that's really the piece in dispute and trying to say, is that culturally significant? You know, do these guys have a genealogical right, I think they call it a pertinent rights to be able to handle their, and the customary rights is another word, customary rights. Are they able to be there? And they'll say, well, you know, this piece that's sacred is, you know, 10 feet to the left over there, and maybe that piece that's sacred is, you know, a few feet that way, and it comes down to really, you know, splitting hairs on what it is. So the whole game, it's just a game, it's a chess game, and the court system is designed to perpetuate what other people might see as the crimes of colonization, right? And, the big taking that happened.
And yet you saw the confusion in the court. The court's not even sure how to handle this. Because honestly, when the state was created, they took into account the Hawaiian Constitution that was here before. They took into account the Kuleana lands, all of that was written into state law, and since then it's been ignored on the Hawaiian part of the thing. You know what these guys, I told Noah years ago, if he was going to do this, he's the tip of the spear, he's the one that's going to pierce the lie, and he's working hard.
It's a lot of pressure, and
on a young man especially,
a lot of responsibility, and you know, to parse through the court structure, it's very difficult because all the discussion that goes on, most of it is being stricken from the record because the plaintiffs are pretty much objecting to almost everything they bring up. It's their job, but the problem with court is it's not about restorative justice. It's not even about justice.
No,
it's about commerce in this case. And who can play the game best? But someone gave me this 1975 California Law Review on Native Hawaiian Land Rights. I read through this. It's probably about 30 pages or 40 pages. And it was really interesting because it is looking at the challenge of the Native Hawaiian land rights. And I just want to read the conclusion of it. I read through it, and it's pretty well written. It gives a lot of information. It could have been written today. And whoever did it put some effort in it. Actually, I know who did it. It was Neil M. Levy. But so here's the conclusion. It says, this is 1975. A central theme of Hawaiian history during the past two centuries has been that the continual displacement of Native Hawaiians from the control and ownership of the lands of Hawaii. This trend has been less than monolithic. Native Hawaiians have received access to a token land base through ameliorative steps such as Kuleana and the Hawaiian Homes Program. Recent pressures against Native Hawaiian land holdings are posed by increased are posed by increased immigration and commercial growth. Just as displacement of Native Hawaiians was accomplished primarily through manipulation of the legal system, so too legal action is necessary to assure Native Hawaiians a future on the islands. Kuleana will continue to be lost unless the legal rights of their owners are protected. Structural changes are necessary if Native Hawaiians are to fully utilize the Bishop Estate and Hawaiian home lands. One catalyst for change would be a major award from the United States in compensation for lands taken in the past. But without a concomitant by the legal system to preserve a land base for Native Hawaiians, their future on the very islands that nurtured their culture is bleak. And I read that, and I go, wow, 32 years later, they've done nothing to make it better.
That's the headline in the papers today, that we have a major loss of the Hawaiian people. They're leaving because they don't have any place to live here anymore. They can't afford to live here. That's Honolulu. That's news today.
Yes, and here when they say manipulation of the legal system, that's what we're watching in court, is the manipulation of the legal system, and it's painful to watch. It's just sitting in there, and, you know, I mean, I'm not even necessarily faulting the developers. The American system is to perpetuate things like speculative investments. I've gone to the Planning Commission meetings many times and seen basically the flipping of a distressed asset from an owner to the lender to another owner. Each time it's being bought somewhat on pennies on the dollar, and each time whoever has it takes a loss.
And the only people that make money on it's the banks.
Well, the banks have taken some losses, too.
And they resell it and make their money again and again and again and again.
Okay, I would say you're right on that. We're going to take a call. And aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, aloha.
Hi.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a statement. You know, in desperate times, we go to desperate measures to do what we got to do to make things work. And in this time, that's what we're doing. We're just moving forward and making forward progress as much as we can.
I agree. You're speaking specifically of the court case and some of the Kanaka Mo'oli efforts in court. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
That's what you got to do. You just got to keep stepping forward and walking into it. There's no backing down from the fight.
Exactly. So, in our eyes, we're basically making the claims. We're declaring our rights, and we're now exercising them. It's asserting them in the way that needs to be done. If not, I mean, we're going to just sit still and wait and wait and wait, and nothing will ever happen. So we got to make these moves in these drastic times. It's now, not tomorrow, you know?
I'm in agreement with that. And when I look at the many people who are not Kanaka Mo'oli, who are standing right behind the effort, it's because really the win that happens in this case is a win for everybody. Because...
Oh, yeah, this will definitely... It'll definitely benefit the entire community. It's not going to just benefit Kanaka Mo'oli. It's going to benefit everyone around us, too. I mean, there's only a few of us, and there's many of everybody else today, but we're all mixed up in the same community. As our people see what these foreigners are doing, standing up to the justification of what's taking place, our own people now are realizing, wow, what are we doing sitting on the sideline? These foreigners are standing up before our own people. So with them standing up with the Kanaka Mo'ole, it's opening the eyes to the Hawaiians. They're understanding that, whoa, these guys are actually living up to the truth, you know?
And what I think is seen particularly by people who maybe are transplants to the islands or have looked at some, like what you, if you were hearing some of the earlier parts of the show when we're talking about war and the manipulation that happens everywhere, it's happening to everybody everywhere. There's just a few people who really like the system as it is, but people of all ethnicities take a loss in a corrupted system.
Those are the
system.
Few that are on top right now, and that's what's got to change. Is we cannot segregate ourselves like that. We're all one people, and we've got to put ourselves back on the same level.
So do you have suggestions? Like you heard that I was reading in this law review piece on Native Hawaiian land rights, which I would like to have you read because it is, there's a lot of information in there that I think is pretty convicting of the current system. Do you see a pathway with the Kuleana land rights? Like how, it's bringing people in to, first of all, be standing up. Can you give us an explanation and right now maybe be speaking to Kanaka Mo'ole, because for those of us who are transplants, we are not beneficiaries of it. How do the people who might have Kuleana land rights voice up, and then maybe how would you gently help the people who have been maybe not doing the right thing for some time? How can they start doing the right thing? Those are two questions.
The first question would be, in my eyes, I cannot speak for everybody, but in my opinion, I would have to say to the understanding that we would work with each other. We would try to work in good faith with one another to make things happen the way we want it to happen.
Amongst the family members, amongst the ohana that maybe are beneficiaries of that kuleana? Is that what you mean?
Well, true. And not only that, though, because now we're talking about the entire community again. We're not just talking about the kuleana rights. You know, you got friends of kuleana people, too, and some of these kuleanas can be acreages, not just, you know, a little half acre. Some of it is huge and is difficult for one family to take care of that much acres, especially if we're going to try to make it to the point where we're going to do, you know, more farming and, you know, again, like an independent way of living where we're going to be raising our own food. So it's getting the entire community involved. You know, we can't do it by ourselves. You guys are here too, and we got to make everybody work together as one to
make it
bring
an
the connection
family.
With all of us back together. You know, everybody, not just the Kanaka. Like, get everybody involved.
I think there are so many people who do want to help with that, and it relates in also to these water diversions that have been in place for 100 or more years that have done a redirect on being able to cultivate those lands as they once were.
Well, yeah, that would be awesome if we could do that, but that's still, again, in the working. We got to go one step at a time, you know. We got to try to get back what's ours first and be able to keep a stronghold of that so it doesn't slip out of our hands, you know, like with these quiet titles going on. We got to first make sure we actually can get on the land, and that's a big role, is getting back on the land and occupying and possessing it. Once you're in possession, that's like majority of the battle.
Yes.
You've already won.
And there's the statement, many hands make light work. And so we've done some shows on this a couple weeks back. Many people went over. There was two Kanaka Mo'ole who went along, but to the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting where we are looking at the diversion of the Wailua waters. And and there are several places, the Waimea River, like other people are taking on that issue of how do we rightfully return the flow of the river? Because as that comes down to whether it is the Department of Hawaiian Homelands lands or Kuleana lands, making those places viable, because it's really hard even just to farm and make any kind of money. The system doesn't allow hardly for subsistence farming. We are incarcerating people for being poor. And probably, like, well, not even probably, the biggest numbers that end up in court and end up at the wrong end of the court system are Kanaka Moali. There's not that many of them left. Then you go to court, and, wow, there they are, you know? So, you know, people are got your back. People are trying. You understand what I'm saying? Are you still there? Hello?
Maybe we lost him.
We might have lost him. Okay. Well, if he would like to call back, he can. And
we're looking at a time in our history. Right. We're looking at a time on this island. We're looking at a time in the world that coming together, working together, supporting each other, learning how to live as community is going to be more important than ever.
Yes, and I think, like, when we were talking about a court case with that there, I want to, just after the bottom of the hour, when we, or we can do that right now, but when we come back, I want to be able to be sharing a clip from the court case for Standing Rock that is really meaningful. And, you know, one of the attorneys for the Standing Rock case is one of the ones for Mauna Kea and lives over on the Big Island. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. Thank you for your conversation in reference to both topics, the current thing in Wailua, in the previous discussion in reference to food and providing food to the community. They both are of the same nature, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Responsibilities and taking care of what, you know, I'm not from here, from Nebraska. So, but also, you know, passionate to this truth, you know, we're all led to this living land here in Kauai. And I'm currently working with the plant of turmeric or Olena, and the vision of what has brought me to that plant is to help fund an elder care and a kid care to provide food and medicine, because it's hard to get a lot of this food to the schools and the elders and the places where it really needs to belong. And I noticed, you know, being on island, say, 10 years watching a lot of people who are transient that come here, you know, here maybe 6 months of the year for on and off here and there. But the food goes to that, and it really doesn't go to the kids and the elders and the community, you know. And it's just a prayer of mine to want to see that gap be bridged.
Yes.
You know?
And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you, Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. So when you're speaking about this Gray who's in here who does help bring food to the kids, he has a little bit to say on that. But what I want to be endorsing on what our caller is sharing is that there are state laws and federal laws that, like the prisoners, you see all that gardening that they do right there. They don't get to eat that food.
Not a bit of it.
They don't get to eat a bit of that. And then when the food, all this organic gleaned food, and I'm not just dissing on non-organic food, but I mean even on the organic gleaned food that makes it to the schools, it doesn't go into their lunches. They can take it home after school, correct?
No. What happens with the Department of Education schools is they have contracts, and it's difficult to get fresh food in there. But through Village Harvest and Kaylee Harshman, we're getting a lot of the fresh fruit. We come pick it up, and we'll get it into the after-school programs. We'll get it into the Hawaiian charter schools. Their primary focus at Village Harvest is getting all that good, fresh, organic food into the hands of children. So,
but it's not in their lunches.
But it's not their lunches. It's the after-school programs. It's getting it into their families.
Right.
It's getting it into their diet stream. But, yeah, actually going through the schools is very, very difficult because of, bureaucracy.
And I think that's what, caller, is that the point you were trying to make, that the bureaucracy puts up a barrier?
Yeah, in the reference, I mean, I've done tried to do things of that gleaning nature, and I'm so proud of what they're doing and what you guys are up to. That's what gave me the initial inspiration. And then with the Wailua case and my own personal inspirations by that movement that's going on, trying to get that story. And that was one of the other aspects with, like, the Hague Convention. I know they're coming to talk with Keanu Tsai. I know he operates with the 501c3, Dr. Tsai. But it's still such a beautiful thing to get this looked at. It's the principle that it needs to be looked at. And I pray for these families, these people here, and my own family. I pray for us all, that the working together and bridging and realizing we got to really look out for the good of our families, to look out for the good of our communities while we're really looking out for ourselves. You know, the ones that are willing to show up. That's why when I hear it's gray, correctly?
Yep.
Is that right? I was so thankful and so proud of you for what you're doing. And I'm pretty sure I've met you before, but I'm not positive. And it's like, I just want to uplift that, you know, and same with the caller before, in relation to the Wailua case, just uplift it. And all of us working together and bringing these issues, that's my desire, is to see cooperation. And if we compete, as our system is very competitive, the business world and all this bureaucracy stuff, but if we do it in a way through our businesses, like they do churches, where we give a percentage, say 30%. If we, you know, some people have made a lot, and they're in a position where they really don't know what to give right now, but they know if they were a part of something great, they would love to, like how the porters are provided so mm-hmm. much, just with, and they've tried so much, and they've had challenges in a lot of ways.
Right. I think people are basically good.
You know, it's a challenge to do good. Mm-hmm. It's a real mm-hmm. challenge. And I just applaud, and I just wanted to bring up those things. And you know, in a few years, I hope with the turmeric thing that I'm doing that I will have taken care of myself enough. You know, I got to look after that and then be able to give, because I do have a child. You know, I got to look after her.
Yeah.
But I see the elders. I just need to respect what's come before and then look after the kids and inspire the middle group with a good job and better pay and knowing that we can do this. We can do this, you know, like
no place better than right here on Kauai.
Yeah, and in following up on what you're saying, and particularly speaking to Kanaka Moli, who might be listening, as transplants like all of us right now voicing are not born here, I think that I know for myself, transformation has occurred on how I viewed the world. I've had a profound paradigm shift that keeps shifting. And it not only becomes an incorporation of cultural values that are consistent for here, but I think it's, you know, we are all indigenous to this earth. We all have a relationship with the earth, and it's like a coming home to have the value system that says, you know, take care of the land first, and that will take care of you.
Oh, the value system, and that's what I pray. It's just the world of the money and the world of what I just see as the great division, you know, the one lie that separates us all. And I just have that faith that if I can do something with that, that's what I feel I've been brought onto this island. Like, you know, you go, what am I put here for? You know, first, why was I born? You know, like, you go through all those questions.
Right, right.
You're like sitting there and you have empathy for life and you see the pain and the struggle. And even with the tourists, you know, they're just trying to seek a good time, and it, coming from the crud that they have to live every day to day, you know, just to get by, to have this be their getaway, you know, and it's like, man, it's heavy right now with all of it around.
Yes.
But at the same time, we're all in the same struggle. Even the ones who were born and raised here, they're currently being corrupted with drugs and family separation, moving to the mainland and
right, all of us. And I'm even learning to not say the mainland, because, like, even just looking at that, like our
yeah.
choice of words, if any other state in the nation had to say, oh, the important states but our own, you know,
yeah.
so it's I've learned that, you know, that's the continental United States or the, you know, the states or
yeah.
you know, something
well,
like that.
Yeah, well, thank you for making that, because I would love to see the Queen's Kingdom or however the right title is.
So
one of that nation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
Aloha.
Aloha.
I want to share something from the Department of Health that I'm glad that they're putting out now about rat lung worm disease, because like when we were just talking about it's tough to, you know, why can't we feed this food to our kids, there is some reason of why that is.
Rat lungworm disease is a risk statewide, but we can all help right in our own neighborhoods by keeping our yards free of slugs and snails, using traps to catch rats and disposing of them properly, and always rinsing fresh fruits and vegetables thoroughly and carefully before eating or cooking. Let's work together to prevent rat lungworm disease. Find more information and tips at health.hawaii.gov, sponsored by the Hawaii State Department of Health.
And mahalo for listening and thinking about how we work with our food safely, because we do need to really be careful and not eat things that aren't good for us or spread it. So, Marshall, we've had a bunch of calls.
Mm-hmm. Two calls. I need to pass on a comment, and
okay.
These are abbreviated comments. The one was that he really just wanted to emphasize that it's money that has changed this island, and it is money that has undercut the Kanaka. And he had some other things to share, but I know sometimes, you know, issues and topics get people, you know, trigger some things, and sometimes it actually does seem wiser to just pass on a message than to go on the air. So, yeah.
So I want to acknowledge that, and when I have made poi over the years with kupuna, and I've had that even on the show here when I've had some kupuna that are, and one even who is the architect for the Coco Palms rebuild, you know, well, the question was, because they all lived before statehood, and what was the change? And they said, all of a sudden, the importance of money and the shift away from just being towards the importance of money. We are going to have another caller real quick. And caller, because we're getting towards the end of the show, this is going to be a quick comment because I have something very much I want to play. I want to hear what you have to say, and Marshall's going to share what the other person is talking about. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. This is Auntie Jo. I just have a quick announcement about a writing class in case anyone is interested in perfecting their skill. It's called a novel writing class. It's in the continuing education at KCC. And it starts on January 16th. You can phone 245-8318, or you can go online to try sign up. But the teacher is a friend and a very talented person, great wordsmith, an award-winning author, this and that. Anyway, offering the class, it's only 4 Tuesdays starting January 16th. The last day to sign up is Friday the 12th. And I just highly recommend it if you have any interest.
Okay, are you in that class?
No, I'm not in the class. But I'm in the writer's group with the guy, Frank Riley, who's teaching the class.
Okay. All right. Well, great. And I don't know if you know about this. I meant to mention it. The Women's March, is that January 20th? Do you know if that's happening on island here, too? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know about anything local. However, I will look into it, and I'd hope to see you there if there is one.
Okay, I know that was a big thing last year, and I've been seeing it being put up on multiple posts across social media. So thank you for calling in, Auntie Jo.
Thank you for your show, Felicia. It's always a wonderful, all these topics and stuff. I'm sorry mine is sort of lightweight by comparison
to
the stuff you've been talking about. But
actually, let me speak to that for a moment. People feeling and gaining the confidence to write and to tell their stories, that's how we change everything, is by being storytellers. And that's where why I think that there is a shift going on, whether it's online, whether it's video, whether it's music. Voices are coming out from all over the place. So a class that helps people have the confidence to find their voice through the written word is profound, and it is absolutely in line with what we're doing. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Sure, this could be an exceptional one, and in a short period of time as well. So,
yes.
Anyway, Happy New Year, everyone.
Okay, Happy New Year. Aloha. Okay, Marshall, you had another caller with something?
Speaking of educational opportunities, Joseph Dunsmore, who is just an amazing soil scientist, has learned by doing and developing his own techniques to grow just amazing food, and is an expert on the soils here on Kauai, has been offering a master class in soil.
You happen to be in that.
Yeah, you and I are both there last time in class two. I believe it's the last of the class two that he is offering is Wednesday. That's tomorrow, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Church of the Pacific. And,
Okay.
And then there was someone who wanted me to pass on that. Hanalei School has a fresh produce program through the Parent-Teacher-Student Association, assuming that's what PTSA
means. It is.
And I believe it was on Wednesdays. There were some other details, and sometimes it'd be great if people go on the air because they have the nicest voice and
right.
have the nicest concise announcement. And I'm just like, I'm not taking notes.
Trying,
I'm
grabbing
my notebook. Yeah, so. but there's a really great program. Greg, do you know anything about that, Ben?
We went food handling safety classes with some of those. They're trying to get the fresh produce brought in. They're learning how to handle it so that they can give it to the kids safely. Being that they don't have a school lunch program down there in Hanalei, they bring the school lunches in from Kilauea. They've been working on a fresh fruit program down there in Hanalei, and hopefully they're going to be a flagship of how to get the fresh fruit into the kids' hands on campus.
Great.
So, great.
That would be really good.
Okay, good.
So Jazz with John is coming up at the top of the hour.
That's it, Felicia. I could mention again the Community Emergency Response Team training coming up this month in Lihue. It starts at January 10th, and you can email KFDCert for more information on that.
And I would love to push Joseph Dunsmore's class over there. He was fundamental in getting our garden started over there at the Church of the Pacific.
Okay.
And I would love anybody who wants to know how to make your soil healthier, come see him. It's by donation. So.
Yeah, it's great. So I really want to play this this video for people to hear because this is about, the cases against the protectors for Standing Rock. And they arrested maybe 800 people. About half of them so far have had their charges dismissed. Something that I learned from going to court with the Kanaka is a lot of times they'll dismiss the case rather than having a ruling, because when you have a ruling, then it sets a precedent. They don't want to have the precedent, so they dismiss the case instead of finding something. So this is a discussion. It's not long, but it is about two Lakota Indians that are going to trial, Chase Iron Eyes and, they'll say in just a moment. Chase is somebody who I'm Facebook friends with and stuff, so I'm focusing on that. So this is Lakota Elder Madonna Thunderhawk and then attorney from Hawaii Island, Lanny Sinkin, who is the one who stopped the super ferry. He is the one who helped to blow up and expose the Iran-Contra scandal in, that was probably the 80s. He's had an incredible law history, and he's over there basically helping them, and he has been one of the people in the contested case for Mauna Kea.
Oh, nice.
So let's... hear this. Hopefully this is going to work right. Oh, shoot. Volunteer radio with a slow... see if it works. A slow internet, so that's unfortunate. Huh. Okay. It looks like it's not going to come on and play for me, so that is unfortunate, but... let me tell you what it is really stating, and I'll put it on my Facebook wall. it's talking about, like, these two Lakota people who were charged with inciting a riot. And so Chase Iron Eyes is looking at 5 years. They are going to countersue. They're not only going to try and lay out all the pieces of what happened, but what they go through in a really good discussion on this here is what happened, where the provocation points were that caused the Dakota Access Pipeline to bring in Tiger Swan, who normally goes and for in Syria or in high militarized places where they go and they basically suppress the indigenous people from hanging on to their own oil or their own resources in those countries. And so they basically, Standing Rock was an opportunity for the federal government. This is under Obama, by the way. This is prior to Trump. Trump has got, you know, his hands dirty on all this too, but this is prior to that, that they used Tiger Swan to treat peaceful protesters.
American citizens,
and then our original American citizens as terrorists. And they used full military gear to go after them.
And tactics.
And this is also the same kind of thing that we're seeing at Wailuanui Ahoanu is making little subsets and saying, okay, the likelihood that we're going to poison this little patch of land is nominal, so we can do it. You know, they break it up in little pieces like that. And so they're going to use this case to be, meaning Lanny guys are going to use this case to try and just really point it out for everyone, because it's not only the Lakota that they are treating like terrorists. It could be any race of people. We have seen when it's the cowboys, they don't go after them as hard.
It's anybody that stands up.
In fact, that's what they said on here. Anybody that stands up.
Well, yep. Anybody that stands up. And you got to be willing to stand up. If you quit standing up, that's when they win.
That's when they win. And it has been, you know, new standing up. So with Standing Rock, that was the first time since the Battle of Little Bighorn that all the Lakota came together and fought together, and the first time ever that so many tribal people across the North American continent and then really across the world
came together as one.
And we had certainly plenty of Kauai people went there. Plenty of people of European descent, African descent, Asian descent, you know, really the whole globe of people came to be able to stand with these people.
Felicia, we had a caller who requested a song by Sudden Rush. You familiar with the musical group Sudden Rush? He said it would mean a lot to the Kanaka Maoli, and I'm looking. I pulled it up on YouTube. Unfortunately, I didn't get the name of the specific song that he requested.
Okay, can you have them call it back in? If you're listening, call Marshall again and tell us what song.
There is one that is a tribute to Gabby Pahinui, and that would be timely. It's Hilawe. Well, that might be him.
Oh, Hilawe? Okay, so it might be him, though, calling back to find out the song. And I did have also another... which song is it?
It's Night Marchman.
I do see that
here on YouTube. Can you pull it up?
I'm going to try. Hey, you know what, right, listeners?
Well, I could like, bring my computer
I'm going to do it right here. We are a talk show, and so I get all nervous about being able to play music. It's kind of.
I'm excited
funny.
To check it out, though. Looks like good.
So we'll go ahead and play that right now, and then... So thank you for your request, and thank you, listeners, for your support of Volunteer Radio that gets a little nervous just playing a song.
You did it.
many people need a riot to walk the earth. Yo, there ain't too many left since these islands burst. Back in the day, long before the white man came, when the few blood of Polynesia filled his face. Feel my pain, it ain't getting easier. From 900,000 to a dying race. Now we're out of place in our own backyard. Start from night, so you better put up your guard. And watch out, the night marches are coming. They start spread right and they're prepared to fight. So, I hope you're ready for me. Because yo, defenseless against my history. The souls of the past join those of the day. The next man, he could go home or Hawaii. Hey, you best to recognize Mike Parker, joining the Hawaiian Uprise.
Afraid of the stories that was told about them night marchers, they be big, bad, and bold. Warriors walking through the paths of paths, but if you come across them, don't make eye contact, just let them go. I'm telling you, just let them be free, cause if they know you're around, they're gonna pick you like a pea. Gonna see you leaky, a real chase your butt from Honolulu to Little Leaky. Your pants full of mimi. People always wondering you if this legend is true. Just ask the Haitian people if they believe in witch voodoo. That sacrifice on the field, this is our belief. But you have respect for these soldiers, then you go at peace. So pay attention, take this like a school lesson. Back in the day, they fought with skilled weapons, still spitting weapons. Yo, I speak the truth, but I don't tell no lie. But if you come across a night marshal, prepare to die.
Side by side, one by one, Pu'ali Kor, Hawaiian soldiers from the time long gone. In the Ho'ele'ele, they make their way over the paths that they walked on back in the day. Can't beat your name, come on, nene, and you start to shake. Because you know that if they see you, then your souls they take. Just lie face down without them making a sound. As they march with their feet not even touching the ground. Curiosity might make you wanna look back. But remember what curiosity did to the cat. And you refuse to believe, so you test. You wake up in the middle of the night when your chest is pressed. Who were cut and poor, as they were known before. They march on the nights of cool Kanelono and Kanaloa long before. On the trails that they traveled long before we saw the sails. And our way of life unraveled in this day and age. As our people move ahead, although Hawaiians die, Hawaiians will never be dead. The spirits of the past, defenders of the future. E pule ke akua and respect the night marchers.
Mahalo caller for asking for that song. Do we have a caller?
No, Felicia. Caller doesn't want to go on the air. I put him on hold so we can wrap up and I'll go back to it.
Okay. Oh, so they don't have something they want to share with the audience?
No, wants to share with me, probably you if you'd get on the phone, but okay. Doesn't want to go on the air.
Okay. All right. So I want to have gratitude for all the callers that have called in, and gratitude for all the blessings that we do have. I certainly feel like KKCR is a blessing. John Gordon, who's following up after me, is definitely a blessing in my life, as are the homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass people. There was a number of topics that I had on the list to discuss, but that just leaves it for next week. And so for people, we'll hear some of the things coming up next week is a couple really positive education options. One is Alakai o Kauai, the charter school that is finally for sure opening. They have a campus. It's in Lauai.
Oh, yay.
It's the Kahili Mountain Park. It's just a beautiful, beautiful campus. So
wow, cool.
The south, the west, you know, midsection is blessed. They're going to be there. And then there's a great program that is opening up for after school in Hanalei. That will be on when we're going to really have a robust discussion on health and health insurance. So thank you so much.
So it's next Tuesday.
So that's next Tuesday. And this health insurance thing is really compelling and personal experiences. So I appreciate that. And we're going to hear the county council report, and we're going to go out with a song by Kaylee again.